Well, welcome everyone. We are back here in the year 2021 for another edition of the Laser Cube podcast. And with me here in 2021, like he was in 2019, is Dean Brennan. He's with us here in studio. And Dean, good to see you. Hope you've had a good 2 years since I've seen you.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been traveling too much. So.
Well, you can join the crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a feeling that's probably going to be changing this year. But I will tell you, the one thing that we have seen change is, of course, a lot of companies have evolved and changed. And the one thing we hear the most about is probably automation. And that's what we're going to discuss here today on this new Laser Cube podcast is automation in the Laser Cube.
Yeah, so with the Laser Cube, we've come out with some options where we're setting these machines up so that you can add automation. And the easiest way would be robotics. And I think we're probably the first laser company that has a standard robotic-ready option that you can just purchase the machine and then you can do your own integration. We've been working on that, but a new use of the machine has evolved, and that is companies that already have laser automation are coming in and they're purchasing a Laser Cube to enhance their existing automation. So hopefully in this next two episodes, we can talk to three of our customers that have automation, laser automation, and they added Laser Cubes afterwards.
I think that's exactly what we're going to be doing.
Oh,
and one of them is actually going to be bringing back someone that you heard in one of the earlier podcasts. So it's going to be kind of like a follow-up episode. But we're going to start with two new people here to the podcast. And actually, let's start with Lars from Eagle Industries.
Yes.
And we'll start off, as we do with most interviews, we asked him about his business and kind of how he implements the Laser Cube.
We do sheet metal fabrication, laser cutting, EDM, punch press, brake forming, insertion. Don't paint or plate here, but pretty much we're just considered a job shop. We don't have our own product. So we get people who walk in off the street who need something made, or, we make components for General Electric as well. So we're kind of all over the board. I have a Prima 6K fiber with a single tower. It's not a giant stacking unit just due to size restraints or building restraints. But that basically is, my machine that we eat up a lot of material with, can run at night. And in the morning, I just have a load of sheets to shake out. It basically is perfect for us because we do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of prototypes a year, and they're often literally one piece brackets for a company. The process of programming these, prototyping them, is pretty arduous in the Prima machine, and it is effortless in the IPG. It allows me to continue running production while I prototype. That was the reason why I bought it, because we were falling behind, because it would take, too much time to stop, to reprogram, for these tiny small little pieces where the 4x4 table and the ease of the programming and making any changes necessary, the IPG unit that we purchased is absolutely perfect for it.
Now, I'm not going to pretend I know or have any idea what he was talking about, so I'll let Dean
It's okay. That's not what you were hired for. If you look at most of our customers, all their critical parts, as far as accuracy dimensions, they wind up on the Laser Cube. So it's a complement to what they're already doing. The machine is, you're not just adding more capacity, you're actually complementing your business. So what was the question that we asked him? Do the parts cut the same?
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, I would think that would probably be the most important part.
Okay.
What's happening with regards to the cuts? And so let's hear what Lars had to say about that.
Its cut is absolutely perfect almost every single time. And the accuracy it's better than a machine that costs four times as much. I mean, I would attribute that probably to the build that you guys have, the way you built it. That was something that stood out, when we went down to the tour, just, well made. Yeah, it's the same rate. We wouldn't be able to. I mean, it eliminated. It's we should have bought one years and years ago. I mean, when they first came out. The other nice thing about it is my Prima also operates off the same power plant as the IPG. So we had a pretty good idea of what getting you know, quality, I guess, out of it, but it far surpassed even what we were getting. Like they said, a machine that costs that much more. We don't cut a lot of heavy gauge in it, but you don't need to for the prototypes. You know, that's why I have a 6K machine as opposed to, I think it's a 2K that I bought from Ubers. The other, I'll add one thing, it is so nice to be able to program nests if you want to run multiple parts out of the machine, as opposed to having to go back in and rewrite another post, and you can do that with your machine. It's great. It's amazing. It's awesome.
So I would say, even though I, once again, don't know what he's talking about, it did sound very good.
No, it was good. He hit all the talking points without us even prompting him.
That's true. That's true. People would think, hey, do you give these guys the answers? No, we do not.
That is correct.
That's 100% true. And so, yeah, like I said, even though I did know what he was referring to, obviously, he was very, very happy with exactly what the Laser Cube had to offer. Now, we also spoke, obviously, like I said, we're going to do two interviews on this episode. And besides speaking with Lars at Eagle Industries, we also talked to Randy at Precision Laser. And as I mentioned, we kind of start our interviews off with kind of the same thing, asking him about his business and how he implements the Laser Cube.
It'll be 27 years this year. We started out with some CO2 machines. Our target market has and still is OEMs, other manufacturers, and we do deviate from that a bit, but that's our biggest target market, and it's worked out well for us. We evolved into automation, so we're running most of our machines, at least half of them, which we have a total of four. We're running them all night and all weekend. That's kind of separated us from our competition also. You know, when we started this, there was like three people in Utah that were doing it. Of course, that's changed now, and now they're everywhere. Been a good run. I can't complain. I've been fortunate in being able to surround ourselves with some really good people. We've got employees that have been here for decades. It's been a good run. The Laser Cube has been huge for us. We intentionally bought that to free up more time on our larger machines and the larger product that we do on it. We do an awful lot of small parts, and it's really filled that void for us and freed up more hours on our big machines. We've actually checked this before I left town. We're up 13% over the same period for last year. So that's pretty good these days because our sales numbers are just off the hook. They've never been as good as they were last year or starting out this year.
We also asked Randy, what was his strategy and thinking when he decided to add the Laser Cube?
Mostly to free up more time on our big machine. So we're doing lots of small parts. I can be specific, they're actually weapons parts. We didn't have enough hours in the day. So the idea was to free up more time on the big machines for the bigger parts we do. We do a lot of stuff for the automotive and marine industry, and those parts are considerably bigger. So the Cube has really filled that void. It's given us a whole bunch of hours, and you know, there might even be a time when we put a second one. So we're getting a bit of a floor space problem these days. Good problem to have.
Yeah, I've been following the Laser Cube for a few years, and then I know some of your other customers, the guys in California that have one. And yeah, it definitely met my expectations. You know, the reliability is there. You know, we used to have Mitsubishi machines, and programming and controller operation is real similar to our older MIT machines. And, you know, I still have employees that ran those MIT machines. So the learning curve has been minimal. And that's a big deal, because one thing I've noticed in all these years is operators can get stubborn, and sometimes they don't like to learn new stuff. And it hasn't been much of a problem with us.
Now, I just wanted to say, I know last time we talked about this on a couple of the podcasts, but he did bring up the size again, which I think it's something to always be said for the Laser Cube, because it does come up whenever we talk to any of these people.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're not taking a big sledgehammer. you don't need the biggest tool in to get the job done. So
now, we also did ask Randy probably the most important question that a lot of you might be asking yourself, and that was, do you make as much per hour on the Laser Cube as you do with other lasers? And here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I charge exactly the same. Our average is about 300 right now. That's what our market is yielding. And we make some exceptions. For example, we've got one big OEM manufacturer in Utah that has, I believe, they're up to about 8 machines, counting their rotaries. You know, they've got a couple of those BLM machines, but we do their overflow stuff. I can't quite get that rate for those guys, but we still good. I mean,
we still do great with them.
So Dean, like I said, that's probably the big question that most people have about the laser cube, you know, with regards to it being able to make as much money as other lasers. And so Randy, I think, kind of said it perfectly.
That he did.
Yeah.
Enough said.
No need to expound. all right, that's going to be it for this episode. We're going to be doing a bonus episode, like I said, with someone who was on one of the earlier podcasts. So we'll be talking to you again very soon. Dean, as always, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, Tyler. Appreciate it.